Hello, if you just joined us, you're watching Stockwatch, tackling your questions in studio this evening. Dirkus Kombrink from Capricroft, Alex Dace from Mthombo Wealth. Don't forget, send those questions through to us, SMS to 41392, email stockwatch at bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at businessdaytv using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gents, evening, a rough day in the markets. Overall down almost 2/3%, India off 0.5%, banks 2.2 down, Resi up 0.3, thanks in part to a 1368 on the ZAR. Trickus, you're one of the folks I've chatted to before about ZAR, and you've got a bit of a knack there. The ZAR's looking a little ugly.
Yeah, I think we were in a bit of the eye of the storm the last few months, some of the realities are coming home to roost now. Some of the emerging markets, not all of them, I think most emerging markets are pretty healthy compared to previous emerging market crises that we've seen in the late 90s, the Asian tigers. I'm not expecting anything like that, but there's a few, Argentina, Turkey, maybe us, you know, that's got some heavy restructuring and rethink to do. And the only thing that's at the moment that looks like that's going to force it upon us is more pain. And it's not just about us. You know, we had some poor figures, first quarter GDP out the other day, but it's interest rates rising from the lowest level ever, 300, 400 years of financial markets history. That's definitely going to take a toll on emerging markets as well, you know, the carry trade and what have you. And then thirdly, geopolitical and trade risk. And who loses the most? You know, it's your open market economies, commodity producers like ourselves.
I spoke to you probably a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago. Rand was at that point around 16 or so. You were saying folks should be bringing back. Frigging, you probably at some point told them to take a little bit off again. Are you saying to clients at this point, hang with it? Or,
well, you know, the problem is with the Rand is it might look undervalued at the moment. You know, fair value is maybe 10, 50, 11, who knows. But the thing is, you know, it's like playing rugby, you know, against the grain. You're playing uphill. You know, over the long term, the average is about 3 to 4%.
Yeah.
That should be going to depreciate against the US dollar unless we increase our competitiveness, which is not happening at the moment. And so does it really matter over the long term?
No, it doesn't. I mean, it's the short
really,
term. It makes us feel better at the bribe. But in 10 years, 13,
but the short term risks are to the upside at the moment.
Alex, let's turn to the markets. The big news over the weekend was Liberty announcing that they'd been hacked. The stock was down 4%, but truthfully, financials were just over 2% off. I'm not sure if you're an investor in it. I'm not sure your view on Liberty. My sense almost is that as much as we're going to point fingers at Liberty, I mean, hacks are just, data being hacked these days is kind of the new normal. And you look at the big, you know, Yahoos and others in America, they're being hacked. It's one of the risks.
No, certainly. I mean, I think it's actually surprising that we haven't seen a major hack with one of financial services businesses up until now. So it was bound to happen. I think it's a good thing for other companies because they really understand that they need to improve the security systems and so forth. I'm not sure what the impact will be on Liberty because this is the first time we've experienced it to this extent. But I think it's probably not as bad as initially feared. But let's see what happens. In regards to Liberty, it's not a business that I really like. I think they've got a lot of structural issues, and it's like a Titanic. They need to change this business in a different direction. It's just too heavy, too old, and I just don't see any innovation at all at this particular stage.
Yeah, that's what Dave Monroe's there for. Unfortunately, he's now got hacks. Your take on Liberty, you agree that it needs a big turnaround and it's not going to be easy?
Not going to be easy. Secondly, fairly dependent on the SA savings rate, which is down, consumers down. And they've got a lot of competition. You know, the financial services industry is highly competitive.
Fair point.
SA. So from a macro and micro perspective, they've got a lot of easy fixes to do, but I think it's quite limited in the context of the micro and the macro environment that they're in.
And as an insurer, they've got the float. They really like bull markets, not bear markets / sideways markets, which is what we had years and years of.
Absolutely.
Other news that came out, Basil Reed on Friday announcing into business rescue in a sense. We were talking, Alex, before we went on air around construction. So Basil Reed's now obviously off the table as an investment. We can add them to a number of others that have gone that way, CK, RBA, Ventures, Teetering. Your take on the sector? I mean, Wilson Bailey's typically the one people are attracted to. A question coming through, is it Wilson Bailey? Should I continue to hold?
Look, SA Construction is under severe pressure. I mean, other than Avenge, you mentioned Group 5 is also tinkering on brink of collapse. Stefan Nuti is doing okay, but not looking great. And Wilson Bailey is predominantly a non-South African business as well. Big operations in Australia. So SA Construction in the listed space has been decimated. I think there's still a lot of activity in the non-listed space, unlisted space. And as a result, it's quite difficult to see a see-through of how overall construction is just by looking at this at a list of stocks at this particular stage. But for me, it's unless we see massive changes in policies from government and so forth, and economic growth going up in excess of 2-2.5%, this is not a sector that I see as opportunity to invest in. I mean, to put it in context, Basil Reed has been around for over 70 odd years.
Yeah.
And then they've gone through very tough times in our history, but to go out of business now, just put in context the situation we're on.
Yeah, and they survived the 70s and the 80s, and they came through it intact. Do you concur? I mean, is there, you know, construction to me was always one of those stocks that if you timed it right, you could do okay, but be careful of them.
Yeah, Jim Rogers has got a quote. He says that certain stocks don't make 3 or 4 year lows, they make 10 to 15 years lows, and that's typical of the construction industry. So keeping that in mind, I've avoided the sector for the last decade or so, and they've come off a very high base. They've overcapitalized heavily, and instead of right-sizing the businesses, they've gone offshore, most of them, further expanding their capacity, you know, and it's complex businesses now. And now I've got all sorts of shenanigans happening. You've got stuff like Marion Roberts trying to buy Avenge back, you know, we just got business units that's the same that they disposed of last year, and it's just chaos. But I think when the dust settles and a few guys have closed down the businesses and the capacity is low in the industry, I don't think it's the macro environment that's a problem here. I think things just too much capacity locally, too much competition, and once a few guys go out of business, frankly, then it'll be better.
The last one standing will be, but no rush.
Which let's might see be that, Wilson Bailey.
Yeah, let's see that shake itself out. Let's wait for some growth to come. This could be another 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
Invicta came out with results. The HEPS before the tax issue was down 23%, a tough period. The tax issue took another 400 million out of their HEPS. Stock down 8.5%. Is there light at the end of the tunnel for Invicta that isn't a train, or is this another one to watch?
Well, except for the tax-related stuff and you know, the fact that it's now a bit of a tainted visa type of story, they've had a tough macro environment, which is unlikely to repeat itself in the coming period. So I think there might be a bit of a some buoyancy in the figures going forward, but they do need to rethink certain things or certain the way they do certain things and respect shareholders and respect and the other stakeholders like SARS. And I think there's still a solid business underlying all the shenanigans that we're seeing at the moment.
Shenanigans? We wait for them to shake their way out.
Yeah, for me, Invicta's a no-go, to be honest. I think there's still a lot of skeletons in the closet for the business. I mean, it's a very complicated tax structure they've had. Now the fines are coming to the fore. Also, there are a lot of acquisitions over the years. Quite a few similarities to a Steinhoff and so forth. I just think that for me, I got zero comfort investing in Victor. I think from corporate governance perspective, minority shareholders and stakeholders, as we referred to. So for me, certainly not. It's looking very cheap, but I think it can become a lot cheaper.
Yeah, cheap can get a lot cheaper. Mm. And until it's 1 cent, then they can do a consolidation. Johan's asking about Long for Life, the Brian Joffe business. He says a sense came out there in discussions to buy another company. He's looking to invest more of them, or should he perhaps wait for a rights issue? That's quite a crafty comment, but they've got about $1.5 billion in cash. They probably don't need a rights issue immediately, depending what they're buying. Your take on Long for Life?
Look, the problem of Long for Life is it's a roll-up company, so it means it's doing a bunch of acquisitions, and you have to assume that these acquisitions are going to be successful. Now, over the last couple of years, we've seen a bunch of these unwind. Think of EOH, think Aspen, think Steinhoff, Ascenders, etc. So I think the market appetite for this is quite low at the moment. And as, in a way, you also have to back Brian Joffe, be able to repeat the magic he was able to do with Bidvest. So I think it can be done, but there's a lot of risk involved here, and as a result, I won't pay too much of my portfolio into this.
So small.
I don't really invest in investment holding companies as a rule. Mostly I can get the same exposure by not investing in them. There's no need for it, for another wrapper or another structure.
Another set
of fees around them, yeah.
Okay, I like that. So let's touch on Billiton. 2-3 years ago, Billiton, Anglo, all of them looking really, really bleak. Had a fairly good run recently. Billiton attractive, perhaps Anglo more so, Glencore?
Oh, It's another one that's going to make 10 or 15 year lows, or maybe they had, and China basically bailed them out. You know, they had $1 trillion bailout basically in the last 2 years. If it weren't for that, the commodity sector would still be down where it was 2 years ago. So and there's a lot of risk regards to China. At the end of the day, you know, most of these guys are price takers. Not the best of businesses. So I think you've had a great run in these businesses. Unless you expect the global economy to fire on all cylinders for the next 3 years or so, you might want to consider selling at these prices.
Yeah, price taking is not a fun place to be in, Alex.
No, agreed. I mean, I agree with what Patricus was saying. Yeah, I think if you do want to play the mining industry, you need to look for the ones that are quality, ones who've got limited debt on the balance sheets, and where the production is actually low end of the cost curve. So I think Billiton ticks most of those boxes. But you really don't need to have exposure to resources if you think about it. So only if you want to have exposure, consider Billiton. But there's no need for investors to hold this over 20, 30 years.
Yeah, SA investors are quite biased towards
resources. No, I'm thinking, it's almost sacrilege. Next, you're going to tell me I don't have to hold a gold mine.
But I
take your point that there is a bias towards, you know, as SA investors. And one of them, you know, is commodities, whether it be a diversified, whether it be a specific.
And 5 years ago, we had a bit of a construction bias as well. But, you know, that's deflated.
And there's no need to hold it. We can look at it and say, thanks. But, I mean, there are 374 shares. We don't have to hold all of them. We don't have to be in all the sectors. Adapt IT, Sabib Shabalala, small stock out of Durban. I don't know if either of you gents are a fair with it. Kind of a wannabe EOH in a sense. And I don't mean that in a negative sense or in the bad sense of EOH. Adapt IT?
Well, I spoke earlier about roll-ups. Adapt IT is another one of those.
Yeah.
So doing a lot of deals. It's worked reasonably well in the past. Tangible NAV is still, I think, negative last time I checked. So balance sheet is still a little bit stretched. So if some of these deals do not work, they might need to come to the market to raise additional funding. So that's a bit of a risk there. But I think they've done reasonably well up until now. But for me, it's just that the risk is too high. I'm a bit opaque about what they're going to do going forward. And as a result, I'm not comfortable holding Adapt IT. I think the quality of earnings also consistently look to improve. And the reason for that is because of all the acquisitions they've done in the recent past.
Sure.
So you need to see those cash flows coming through and working capital being under control.
Yeah.
Once again, you don't need to invest in SA IT type of. So, you know, there's a much bigger opportunity set offshore with regards to companies like
Amazon or a Tencent via NASPASS or something like that.
Yeah, which is much higher quality than Adapt IT.
Time for a quick break. Keep sending your questions through SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Right back after this. Welcome back. Taking a look at global markets. Across in the US, we read across the board the S&P 500 just over 0.25% down. The Nasdaq 0.1% down, and the Dow Jones leading the way off 0.5%. Across in Europe, again a red day, although the FTSE 100 a couple of points into the red. The CAC around 40 out of France, almost 1% down, and the DAX in Frankfurt out of Germany, following their football team, down 1.33%, taking some pain there. Questions coming through. Discovery trading up at 180 odd at the end of last year, and the excitement around SA Inc. being under massive pressure, probably needing a rights issue maybe to capitalize their bank. 140 odd, your take on it?
Look, Discovery, I've been probably a contrarian on this one for quite some time. I've been very bearish on the business. And my reasons for it, I think that, you know, if you look at the accounting and so forth, it was exceptionally aggressive in regards to
complex
revenue recognition.
The assumptions, actuarial assumptions are very aggressive.
So actuarial assumptions for aggressive revenue recognition and complex, you know, makes it very difficult to assess the true risk and potential for Discovery. Yet the market is willing to pay massive premium to embedded value for its business, and assuming everything they touch will turn into gold. Which, to be fair, Arian Gore has done a terrific job building his business up until
so
now.
So far, I mean, not to besmirch his name, but...
You know, I do not like the UK assets. Ping An, it's difficult to assess how big this business really can become. And at the same time, you're still overextending yourself in health, life, short-term insurance, and also banking. I think somewhere they might probably drop the ball, and as a result, there's not enough margin of safety for me to want to consider Discovery. So as a result, I remain contrarian, and I prefer not to hold to Discovery.
Now, Sammy, I think the SA business is struggling at the moment, stagnating. Mm-hmm. I also don't like the UK business, and investors are basically pricing in a lot of growth for Ping An.
Yeah, that's their Chinese asset. Everyone's like Ping An could be the new something or other.
Because of the enormous addressable market there, you know, there's a few billion people, so obviously this thing must do something. That's I'm not buying it.
Yeah, they're not all, not every Chinese company is going to be a Tencent on that point. Question coming through on NASPAS, trading at a discount to the Tencent holding, all the other assets therefore essentially free. That discount's narrowed a little bit, but still quite wide.
Look, I never buy something just for the discount. I tend to look at the compounding ability of a business. And what they've shown with the recent sale of Flipkart, Morgan Stanley has done a few calculations, and they've shown that that's up to date, up into the Flipkart transaction, they've actually shown IRR of about 15%, which is not bad, you know, for something that trades at a discount for their non-core portfolio, their e-commerce businesses. And actually the market is pricing a zero value on those businesses, but they're providing 15% IRR. That must be worth something. So the discount should narrow over time. The problem is there's not enough. It's under-owned in SA, and that won't change because it's about 20% of most indices that mm-hmm. that is traded in, and you know no institutional investor in his right mind is going to put a 20% investment into one single share, even if it's NASPAS. So it's going to stay under-owned in SA. So it's a bit of a structural problem with regards to share ownership, and the one thing that we did see last year is foreign ownership of NASPAS increasing. But at the moment, they're skittish because they're skittish of emerging markets in general. So that's why the share price is under pressure. It won't last forever, you know. And I think this is a great entry point for NASPAS.
Does a potential listing in the US or perhaps Europe solve some of that under-owner? It won't solve it locally, but it'll expand that
Yeah, space. But I think in Hong Kong, it's a possibility. The dual share ownership structure, the N shares, is a problem. Most European...
Fair point.
That's the problem. I think Hong Kong has alluded to that the fact that they might be willing to take NASPAS on, and that's a possibility.
Your take on NASPAS, as Dricker says, biggest share in our market, 20% of the big indices.
Yeah, I agree with what Dricker said, but for me, of late, what makes it interesting is that they've proven that they can actually sell a part of Tencent, even though they freeze it now going forward for the time being. And they also sold the Flipkart, so realizing some value there. And recently announced that they're going to stop issuing new shares for management compensation and so forth.
They'll buy shares in the market with their giant cash pile, which is positive.
That really, with the in-share structure, really led to the dilution or the discount really increasing significantly. So I think these are positive things, and we're seeing NASPAS doing the right things. And I agree, with the understood part of the portfolio, I think there is a value there. And as a result, I'm very bullish still on NASPAS. At Tencent, it's going to be difficult to gouge in a shorter term. But if you take a 3-5 year view, this business is certainly going to continue to grow unless you see some sort of major pullback in China.
Something that happened today, Google invested about $500 million into JD.com.
Yes.
JD.com, Tencent has a 15% stake in JD.com again, and you know, that's considered the Amazon of China at the moment. So more eBay over Amazon, but it's changing the business model to more of Amazon. So there's a lot of upside longer term in Tencent.
Yeah. Agreed. Also, if you look at Tencent's associate portfolio, I mean, you've got the likes of Didi Chuxing in there as well, JD.com, a bunch of other assets, which I think is significantly undervalued at this particular stage. So look out for those, as they could be a real kicker.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, one like the Uber of China, and they're a bunch of businesses that are not young kids doing things on their
They're protected. You know, the Chinese government protects these businesses against the foreign, you know, and against foreign competition. You know, what more do you want?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the reasons why Uber basically capitulated in China and said, yeah, you know, take it, we don't want to play here. And part of that is the Chinese government.
Exactly.
It's not a level playing field, but it's nice if you are on that playing field as Tencent is. What about Vodacom? They announced their completion of their BEE deal last week, and a very successful deal. Announced a new deal, which they've moved from South Africa level to group level. Share taken a bit of a hit. Alex, your take on Vodacom?
Sure. First of all, I think I'm not a fan of the Safaricom deal which they've done. I'm unconvinced that this deal is going to add value to the business. If you look at the capital structure, I mean, it's significantly impacted. The ROE is significantly lower in the business. I think that's led to a massive derating in the stock. And the BEE deal, it seems like they did the bare minimum that's required. I mean, if ICT Coast changes and they need to increase it from 20 to 30%, they'll have to do another deal.
So I think that's more dilution, and the dilution biggest at dividend, which is how you buy Vodacom.
And the dividend has been, I think it's going to be 6% lower, and there's probably zero growth over the next 2 to 3 years because of the dilution already. If I was a long-term shareholder, I would not be impressed with this. And as a result, I can understand the share price being under a lot of pressure.
Your take? I mean, they're X-growth is a big word, but they saturated, and they almost, and we're seeing it in the US with the mergers between AT&T and all the others, Verizon trying to get some relevance as to be more than just data operators.
Yeah, the thing is, we've considered the ICT sector as X-growth about 10 years ago, then data came through, and data's driven revenues the last 10 years, while the problem is data, in SA at least, has reached a more mature phase. And at the moment, you know, a company like MTN might look more attractive because it's in more growth markets, exposure's more, it's got less of a data mix in it, you know, it's a bit more data upside than Vodacom has. And I think the problem is with both of them, they are big counters in the emerging market index, which has been thrown out, you know, and sometimes the baby gets thrown out with the bathwater kind of thing. Not bad businesses. But I would like to own Vodacom cheaper. It's a decent business, but it's not a great business.
And let's take on MTN. I mean, Tricker says MTN's got 22 markets. A lot of them, sort of further down that curve than we are. A lot of them, of course, also, Turkey and Iran and the like, which adds some challenges as well.
Look, for me, MTN is very, very difficult to gouge. First of all, I think the risk element is very difficult to assess because even markets like Iran and Syria and so forth, and in Africa, of course. So I think just based on that, it probably deserves a discount to some of the other emerging market players or specifically Vodacom. And I also think the valuation is quite high, even though the stock has pulled back significantly. I mean, the earnings base has been hammered and it's not really expected to recover in the short to medium term. However, if you look on a positive side, if the management team can actually restore this business because it was heavily mismanaged the last few years, I think there could be opportunity, but I see it more of a medium to long term instead of the shorter term, where I still can see more downside.
And more management, perhaps, than markets. Quickly, before we go to stock picks, a question around Hulamin. Will Trump influence demand? I don't have a clue what Trump's going to do, but he has a business that is on its knees.
No, it's part of the broader, say, manufacturing woes. Labor is getting more and more uncompetitive. Electricity, which is a major input for aluminium smelter, has skyrocketed the last few years, and as has many other input costs, municipality rates and taxes, stuff like that. It all adds up, and we've grown heavily uncompetitive over the last 10, 20 years in SA. So there you can see that in PPC's price, you can see that in ArcelorMittal's price. We can just import these stuff cheaper at the moment. It's as easy as that.
And these are, to the earlier comment, these are stocks that it's not just that they can have lows for 5 or 10 year lows rather than 1 or 3 years. It's they need a lot to happen at their level, at country level, for that light to not be a train.
Yeah, look, for Hulamin to really survive, if you think about it, I mean, you need to see labor reform and you need to see major changes in electricity supply in South Africa where the cost of electricity actually decreases instead of going upwards.
Well, the rally 20.
Yes, then SA manufacturing could maybe survive and flourish again in this business. But if that doesn't happen, these businesses will go slowly out of business over time.
And let's wait for it to happen, rather. Let's go to stock picks. Drikus Equiniti.
Equiniti, yeah.
Here we go.
Equiniti, it's like a computer share of the UK. They unbundled from Lloyds. In 07, I think, or 08, it was part of the restructuring just before or within the global financial crisis. Lloyds unbundled it. And they added a few businesses, did a few small bolt-on acquisitions and expanded the service base. They already had this captive client base.
Yeah, for the share certificates, and that is
the cost to transfer to change from one provider to another for customers is enormous. So, they've got an excellent retention rate with their customers, and they've added a few small businesses on and quite astutely grown the earnings over time. And what has happened in the last years, they've bought Wells Fargo's, with Wells Fargo's, but they've bought their share registry. So they've entered the US and they're going to do the same there. And it's trading at a forward P of about 15, which is not expensive for a company that almost never loses any clients.
Yeah, doesn't lose clients, night motor around it. Alex, Old Mutual, you'll be getting your quotas end of this week, later this week?
Yes, on Monday. So I think Old Mutual for me is a short-term valuation-driven stock pick. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that SA Inc. has been under pressure and all Ramaphoria is abating at the moment, it's created some sort of opportunity now, Old Mutual, because the mass separation process is continuing. And I think there is some value that's going to be unlocked in there. It's going to be obviously called to happening on Monday, and then the day after Old Mutual will be listed, LTD. And then 6 months later, you'll get your net banks. I just think over this process, there's going to be some of value created, and it's probably not a bad place to hide in the time being.
Okay, nice for the next 6 months. So that's thanks to our guests, Dricus Kronbrink from Capricorn, Alex Dace from Nthombo Wealth. Thank you for watching and your questions. We'll take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening. Let's go to stock picks. Dricus Equiniti.
Equiniti, yeah.
Here we go.
Equiniti, it's like a computer share of the UK. They
okay.
unbundled from Lloyd's in 07, I think, or 08. It was part of the restructuring just before or within the global financial crisis. Lloyd's unbundled it or sold it. No, they unbundled it, yeah. And they added a few businesses, did a few small bolt-on acquisitions and expanded the service base. They already had this captive client base.
Yeah, for and, the share certificates.
The cost to transfer the, what do you call it, the not a transfer cost, to change from one provider to another for customers is enormous. So, you know, they've got an excellent retention rate with their customers, and they've added a few small businesses on, and quite astutely grown the earnings over time. And what has happened in the last years, they've bought Wells Fargo's, you know, with Wells Fargo's with their, but they've bought their share registry. So they've entered the US, and they're going to do the same there. And it's trading at a forward P of about 15, which is not expensive for a company that almost never loses any clients.
Yeah, doesn't lose clients, night motor around it. Alex, Old Mutual, you'll be getting your quotas end of this week, later this week?
Yes, on Monday. So I think Old Mutual for me is a short-term valuation-driven stock pick.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that SA Inc. has been under pressure and all Ramaphoria is abating at the moment, it's created some sort of opportunity in Old Mutual because the mass separation process is continuing, and I think there is some value that's going to be unlocked in there. It's going to be obviously called to happening on Monday, and then the day after Old Mutual will be listed, LTD. And then 6 months later, you'll get your net banks. I just think over this process, there's going to be some of value created, and it's probably not a bad place to hide in the time being.
Okay, nice for the next 6 months. So that's thanks to our guests, Dricus Kronbrink from Capricorn, Alex Dace from Nthombo Wealth. Thank you for watching and your questions. We'll take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening.